I'm Spencer Beckwith for KUNM. 1623 was a fateful year for English literature and for the history of publishing. In December of that year, the first folio went on sale. That's what we call it today, but in 1623, readers knew it by its title, Mr. William Shakespeare's Comedies, Histories, and Tragedies. This book marked the first time that the 36 plays we generally accept today as being written by Shakespeare were collected in a single volume, and the first time that half of those plays, 18 of Shakespeare's plays, were published at all. Without the first folio, we would not today have Macbeth, Antony and Cleopatra, The Tempest, Twelfth Night, and 14 others. This year, the Folger Shakespeare Library in Washington, D.C. is sending around the country an exhibit about this extraordinary book to commemorate the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's death. The first folio, The Book That Gave Us Shakespeare, comes to the New Mexico Museum of Art in Santa Fe in February. We'll be hearing about the exhibit from Mary Kershaw, director of the New Mexico Museum, a little later in this half hour. First, we're going to take a look at the folio itself, its significance and history. Our guest, scholar John F. Andrews, was in charge of the academic programs at the Folger Library for 10 years, and he edited its publication, Shakespeare Quarterly. John also produced for Scribner's a pair of multi-volume reference sets on Shakespeare, as well as editions of the Bard's works, including the 16-volume Everyman Shakespeare. John F. Andrews is a Carlsbad native and now a resident of Santa Fe. John, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Spencer. It's a delight to be here.
It's great to have you with us. Now, first of all, John, so we know what we're talking about, would you describe the first folio? What does it look like?
Well, I suppose the best example might be a family Bible or a large encyclopedic volume. It's a large book. And one of the things that made it quite unusual was that it was the first time in publishing history that a volume of this kind had ever been devoted to plays. Ben Jonson, in 1616, 7 years earlier, had put out a volume called The Works of Benjamin Jonson. It included 9 plays, but it also included masks and lyric poetry and other forms of more conventional literature. But what made Shakespeare's volume unique, really, was that it was the first time that anything had ever been devoted just to dramatic works. Jonson was satirized during his time for calling works what other people called plays. And in Shakespeare's time, that was a distinction that meant something. Plays were things that you associated with frivolity in many cases because of the comedies that you would see in theaters. And works were associated with, say, theological treatises, historical volumes, heraldry, books of heraldry, serious literature, as opposed to the kinds of things that we now would think of as popular entertainment.
Plays were not considered important
works. That's right.
At this point.
That's right.
And the folio format was reserved for important books like the ones you mentioned.
Absolutely. Yes.
Now, the previous published plays of Shakespeare, the 18, and
yes,
were published before the first folio, they were published in what form?
Well, they were what we would now call paperbacks. They were called quartos. And that had to do with the printing format that was used. They were relatively inexpensive, and they were made available for people who had seen the plays performed at the Globe and in other theatrical venues, and who then wanted to spend more time getting to know them in detail. And they seemed to have been quite popular. A number of them were published in several different editions. For example, Richard II was issued in at least four quarto volumes before it was later published in the first folio.
And some of these quartos have survived.
Yes. In much smaller quantities than would be true of the first folio. Hamlet, for example, the Folger has, I believe, a copy of the second quarto published in 1604, or maybe 1605. Different copies have different dates. It was apparently published right at the end of 1604. But the Folger does not have the first quarto of Hamlet. For that, you have to go to another library, the Huntington in California, which claims to be the only place in the world where you can see all three versions of Hamlet in one place.
Wonderful. We should say that when Shakespeare's plays were in production in his lifetime,
yes,
in his time, the actors were not working from full scripts. There was no such thing as a full script. Am I correct?
Well, they were working with parts. There was a full script, but that would have been in the hands of the prompter, the man who oversaw the production, made sure that the entrances and exits were handled properly and that people came on at the proper time and spoke the lines in the proper sequence. In all likelihood, Shakespeare would have been something like the director of his own plays working with the prompter. And he would have given cues to his fellow actors. He himself participated in many of the plays that he wrote, as well as in plays by other members of his company. Ben Jonson, for example, at least two of Ben Jonson's plays included Shakespeare as an actor.
So, in 1622, two colleagues of Shakespeare decided to create a collection.
Yes.
Of the plays. What was that process like? We have said that 18 were previously published. 18 were not published.
That's right.
So how did they create those 18 plays?
Well, it would have been a labor of love, for one thing, because it was not easy in some cases to obtain copies of the earlier quartos that had been printed and for which it would be necessary to acquire publishing rights. They also had the problem, in many cases, of coming up with good manuscripts for the plays that hadn't been printed first, or good annotated early quartos for the ones that were going to include revisions, aspects of the plays that were not included in the original publications. They saw themselves really as they put it, saving Shakespeare's works for posterity. They really felt that this was a man whose talent was unique, a man whose impact on theater history had already been well established, but they also felt that these were works for posterity and that they should be read as well as seen and heard in the theater. So in effect, what they did was turn works that were dramatic in performance into literature.
In 1623, when the first folio appeared, that was 7 years after Shakespeare had passed away.
That is correct.
In 1616, Shakespeare's plays were still in performance at that point.
Yes.
The versions of the unpublished plays that appeared first in the first folio came quite often from the actors who were performing the plays. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
So the actors would get together and say, this is what so-and-so said in a certain scene.
Yes, and it was very collaborative. We know that probably Shakespeare would have provided a manuscript that the prompter and other members of the company would use. They would make some changes, probably before they performed. And as they rehearsed and performed the plays, they probably saw ways in which they could be either adapted for particular occasions or improved. And so differences that we find from one text of a Shakespearean play to another probably reflect changes that were made as a result of performances in which they felt, for example, that some things could be improved. In Hamlet, for example, when Polonius is giving his advice to Laertes, his son, he tells him, among other things, neither a borrower nor a lender, boy. And I decided to keep that in my edition of Hamlet because I felt that probably Polonius, being a man who implies words that he doesn't actually speak and who calls his daughter Ophelia girl in a passage in that same scene, might very well have implied the word be, but then addressed it directly to his son, calling him boy. But then I figured that since it's neither a borrower nor a lender be in the first folio, somebody in the company came up to Will and said, you know, that line is never going to make it into Bartlett's.
In other words, there has been a lot of controversy over the years about what is exactly right and what Shakespeare intended.
That's right.
Now, we call this the first folio. There were subsequent folios.
Yes. There were three additional folios. There was one in 1632, and then there were in 1663 and 1664 a third folio that in the second edition included seven additional plays in addition to the 36 in the first and second folios. And those were retained in the fourth folio in 1685.
And those seven plays are today not considered entirely legitimate Shakespeare works. We can assume, since there were second, third, and fourth editions, the first was very successful.
Yes. The fact that it was reprinted within a decade shows that it more than met the expectations of the publishers. Their investment obviously did pay off.
And it was expensive.
It was. It was probably sold for 15 shillings, possibly more. That would have been about 3/4 of a pound. And that would have been real money in Shakespeare's time. And it would have been something like 15 or 20 times the price of a quarto. So this was an investment for somebody to buy a copy of this collected volume.
And I believe they published 750.
That's a guess. Earlier scholars thought maybe as many as 1,200 copies. And this was the view of Charlton Henman, who probably did more than anyone else to study how the book was printed and proofread. But a later scholar, Peter Blaney, has come up with what is generally accepted now as a better estimate of 750. Of those, we have about 233 at present scattered around the world, more than a third of which are at the Folger Shakespeare Library on Capitol Hill.
And for that, we have Henry Clay Folger.
That is correct.
To thank. 1623, still quite early in the history of publishing. Gutenberg printed the Bible, 1455.
Right.
St. James' Bible appeared in 1611. Mm-hmm. So publishing Shakespeare's collected plays in 1623 was a major event.
It was indeed. And it is a landmark. I think everyone would agree that although it's not as rare as other volumes that came out during the period, it is incomparably the most valuable, the most influential publication of the period. The only rival to it in the English language would have been the 1611 Authorized Bible published under King James.
Now, John, Julius Caesar, for instance, which was not previously published, mm-hmm. appeared first in this folio. When we see a production of Julius Caesar today,
yes.
how much of what we're hearing and seeing is dependent on that first folio?
Well, it's the only source we have. And who knows? Maybe the world would have been better off if Julius Caesar hadn't been published because, as you perhaps know, in 1865, an American actor decided to reenact the play as a play within a play for a comedy that was taking place at Ford's Theater.
Julius Caesar has incited people over the years, including John Wilkes Booth. In your opinion, John, what would our understanding today be of Shakespeare if the First Folio had never existed?
I think Shakespeare would still be revered. And I say that because many of the editions that did come out during his lifetime are extraordinary. We would still have, for example, very good texts of A Midsummer Night's Dream, The Merchant of Venice, the Henry plays, Richard II. So we would not be completely without a sense of who this man was and what his works represented. But I think we wouldn't have anything like the understanding of him in the context of his time that we have as a result of the First Folio, where we have, for example, a wonderful prefatory poem by Shakespeare's contemporary and rival Ben Jonson, describing Shakespeare as soul of the age, and then going on to call him not of an age, but for all time.
And we still quote that today.
Yes, we do.
Still is absolutely true. By the way, you are listening to KUNM. I'm Spencer Beckwith, and I'm speaking with Shakespeare scholar John F. Andrews. We're talking about The First Folio, the volume of Shakespeare's collected plays that was published in 1623. The First Folio, the book that gave us Shakespeare, is touring the country in a first-time-ever exhibit from the Folger Library in D.C. That exhibit will be in residence at the New Mexico Museum of Art in Santa Fe in February. Joining John and me now is Mary Kershaw, director of the New Mexico Museum of Art. Mary, it is so nice to have you here. Thanks for coming in.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, lots of touring exhibits are available to the New Mexico Museum of Art during every year. Why did you want to bring this exhibit to Santa Fe?
This exhibit really caught my eye because of the First Folio. It's not just another exhibit. It's a one-off opportunity to bring a really world-class piece of culture to the people of New Mexico, and I couldn't miss that opportunity.
And as I understand it, the Folger does not lend out these copies of the First Folio very often.
No, that's right. This is a special project that the Folger Library has come up with to commemorate Shakespeare's anniversary of his death. And it's a very ambitious project where they will be placing one copy of the Folio in every state and territory in the United States during this year.
Wow. Congratulations.
So we're the New Mexico venue.
That's wonderful. How is the Folio going to be exhibited? Of course, the First Folio itself is the centerpiece. How are people going to be presented with that?
Well, the Folger is touring an exhibit with the Folio open to the page of Hamlet's famous To Be or Not to Be soliloquy. And it is surrounded by interpretive panels that the Folger has come up with that talk about the volume Shakespeare, reading Shakespeare. So that's what's touring. What we've done is we have created a context exhibit for the First Folio called Stage Setting Mood, which talks about theatricality in the visual arts. So it will be an experience that prepares one for viewing the Folio. And then aside from that, we will have an exhibit called Medieval to Metal, The Art and Evolution of the Guitar. And it also does talk about stringed instruments during the time of Shakespeare. So there's a wonderful sort of context for the Folio.
And in fact, music is a very big part of Shakespeare's plays. So that's an extremely appropriate exhibit.
Indeed.
To accompany it. You also have created a situation where people can explore what printing was like in Shakespeare's time.
That's right. We're working in partnership with the New Mexico History Museum And they have the Palace Press over there. They're right across the street from us. So people will be able to view the first folio, the exhibit surrounding it, take a photograph of themselves in our selfie station, which is sort of Shakespearean themed, and then head over to the History Museum, where the Palace Press will be doing demonstrations of printing from the period at specific times.
Now, I'm assuming that the first folio itself is enclosed in some sort of a case.
Yes, indeed. It is within a case.
We are not allowed to touch it or to handle it.
That's right.
And on a prosaic level, one has to mention that this is a very valuable book. I think the last time one went up for auction, it sold for $5 million. So insurance is a big part of this exhibit and how the whole thing was put together.
Insurance is part and parcel of what we do at the Art Museum every day. So it's sort of business as usual for us. But we are mindful that people won't be able to touch the book and explore it. So we are purchasing a facsimile that we will have available in the museum so that people can explore that and get a sense of what the rest of the book might look like. But the thing that the folio offers, and it's really hard to explain this until you're actually in the situation. But that folio is the real thing. It's what was produced. It has traveled the world. Here it is in New Mexico. And the excitement of that direct connection with Shakespeare and his contemporaries is what, to me, is so special about this experience.
As any smart museum would, the New Mexico Museum of Art has reached out to the Santa Fe, the New Mexico community, to see if other organizations would like to take part in the excitement of having the first folio in this part of the country. And people have stepped forward, organizations have stepped forward, so that there is an incredible array of events and exhibitions and performances going on while the first folio is here.
It has been amazing to me how people have stepped up and wanted to be involved in this project. And honestly, if you are a Shakespeare buff and you can't get enough of Shakespeare, this February is going to test that. And we have events starting in January and going through until after the folio leaves. And what's really wonderful is we have a range of events, readings, performances, informal talks, academic lectures, family fun day on Valentine's Day. So something for everyone. We're at the museum putting on a lot of these, the History Museum, but then theatrical groups, community groups, educational groups. And you can find out what's going on in Santa Fe or in your area by visiting our website. We have a page dedicated to the first folio, and as events come to our attention, we put them on there so you can interrogate it and find out what's going on.
And that website is nmartmuseum.org. Could you dangle in front of our ears some of those events that you are particularly looking forward to?
Well, I have to say, I always enjoy our exhibition openings. And they're free and open to the public. So Friday, February 5th, we are celebrating the arrival of the folio at the museum from 5:30 to 7:30. And we will have Musica Antigua de Albuquerque performing at the museum. And it's just a wonderful social event for people to come together, see the folio, and meet with people who are like-minded and have similar interests. It's a real community event. The other things that I'm particularly heartened by are the schools programs that we have for the folio. And we have had phone calls from schools in Clovis, Las Cruces, Las Vegas, Albuquerque, about coming to see the folio. So we anticipate that schools, higher educational institutions, and groups will be booking tours to see us. So much so that although we're normally closed on a Monday in February, while the folio is with us, we will be open 7 days a week.
Wonderful. In other words, there is tremendous interest.
It has been so encouraging how much interest there's been.
That last answer of yours, Mary, leads me to one last very simple question. You've already addressed it a bit, but I would like to open it up to you and to John. Why go to this exhibit. What is the value of being in the presence of some old book? Why?
One thing about this old book is that it opens with a play called The Tempest. And The Tempest, as far as we know, was inspired by an event that took place in 1609. It was a shipwreck off the coast of Bermuda. And the first performance of The Tempest that we have a record of occurred in November of 1611. So Shakespeare was writing The Tempest, in all likelihood, at the same time that the governor's palace was being built in Santa Fe. And you may recall that one of the most famous lines in the play, Brave New World, inspired a novel by Aldous Huxley, which contains scenes in northern New Mexico on a savage reservation that is the antidote to all the terrible things that are happening in the early 20th century. So it's altogether appropriate that this book come to Santa Fe. Santa Fe and The Tempest basically grew up together.
For me, Spencer, I agree with everything that John has said, and I think the history of the book is so interesting. But for me, as a museum person, fundamentally, it is being connected to a real thing that belongs to another time. This object was actually in existence, as John says, when the Palace of the Governors was being created and in existence. And to have that direct physical connection with something that echoes through the ages, all of a sudden Shakespeare becomes something more than someone we've studied or a play that we've just seen. But here is a real physical thing from his time, from his place, and from his friends. And that direct physical connection is just so exciting. That's why it has to be here, and that's why people have to come to see it.
Mary Kershaw, director of the New Mexico Museum of Art, and Shakespeare scholar John F. Andrews, joined us here at KUNM this morning to talk about a book published almost 400 years ago in 1623, a book that seems to me essential to our culture and the way we view our world. Mr. William Shakespeare's Comedies, Histories, and Tragedies, otherwise known as the First Folio. A touring exhibit from the Folger Library in Washington, D.C. is coming next month to the New Mexico Museum of Art, located just off the plaza in Santa Fe. The First Folio, the book that gave us Shakespeare, opens on February 5th and runs through the month. For information, visit nmartmuseum.org. Mary, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Spencer.
John, many thanks for sharing your knowledge with us.
Thank you, Spencer.
To listen to this program again, log on to kunm.org. For KUNM, I'm Spencer Beckwith.